Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Japanese Death Poems by Joel Hoffman presents a curated window into Jizi, the Japanese tradition of composing a final poem at the approach of death. Drawn from Zen monks, haiku poets, and other writers shaped by Buddhist and literary disciplines, these brief works condense a lifetime of practice into a few lines that face impermanence directly. Hoffman, known as a scholar and translator of Japanese literature, frames the poems so that readers can approach them not as exotic curiosities, but as living artifacts of spiritual training and artistic craft. The book highlights how a death poem can function at once as farewell, self-portrait, and last exercise in attention. Rather than offering melodrama, many pieces emphasize simplicity, nature imagery, and a clear-eyed acceptance of transience. For modern readers, the collection becomes both an introduction to Japanese poetic forms and a contemplative companion, inviting reflection on how language, silence, and awareness meet at the edge of life. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the Jizi tradition and its cultural purpose. A central topic in the book is the tradition of the death poem itself and why it developed as a recognizable practice in Japan. The Jizi is not merely a record of final words, but a deliberate, often formalized act shaped by Zen discipline, courtly and later haiku aesthetics, and a broader cultural comfort with ritualized leave-taking. Hoffman's selection makes clear that these poems sit at the intersection of literature and spiritual preparation. Many were composed close to the moment of death, yet they tend to avoid confession or narrative. Instead, they aim for a distilled gesture that acknowledges impermanence while maintaining composure. Understanding this context helps readers see the poems as part of a lineage, where writers respond to predecessors and shared conventions, even when the voice feels intensely personal. The practice also implies an ethics of attention to die well is, in part, to meet the moment without clinging. By introducing the tradition through many examples, the book shows how a culture can normalize mortality without trivializing it, turning the final moment into an opportunity for clarity, gratitude, or quiet humor rather than denial. Secondly, Zen perspectives impermanence, non-attachment, and direct seeing. Many of the poems come from Zen monks whose training emphasizes direct experience over elaborate explanation. In that setting, a death poem becomes a final demonstration of practice, not in the sense of performing for an audience, but of embodying non-attachment at the most difficult threshold. Across the collection, readers encounter recurring Zen themes such as impermanence, emptiness, and the refusal to grasp at identity. The language is often plain, relying on a single image or a brief turn of thought that points to what cannot be held. This is where the poems can feel paradoxically intimate and impersonal. At once, they may register a personal season, a moon, a falling blossom, yet they also dissolve the self into the larger flow of change. The book implicitly teaches how Zen aesthetics align with Zen philosophy. Brevity is not just style, but a commitment to remove excess, including emotional excess, until what remains is a clear perception. For readers unfamiliar with Zen, the poems offer an accessible way to sense its outlook without a heavy doctrinal frame, allowing the mood and imagery to carry the teaching. Thirdly, haiku in classical form, how strict brevity carries meaning. Another important topic is how poetic form shapes what can be said at the end of life. Many entries reflect haiku or haiku-adjacent sensibilities, where constraint forces precision. Even when translated into English, the poems retain the hallmark qualities of compressed observation, seasonal reference, and a pivot that opens interpretive space. The book demonstrates that the power of these works often comes from what is omitted. Instead of explaining fear or hope, a poet may offer a momentary scene, trusting the reader to feel the implication. This approach matches a broader Japanese aesthetic in which suggestion can be stronger than statement. Readers can also notice how form supports emotional balance. A strict structure can steady the mind, giving the writer a familiar vessel when facing the unknown. At the same time, the collection shows variety. Some poems feel austere, others playful, others quietly lyrical. This range helps counter the misconception that death poetry must be uniformly solemn. By focusing attention on craft, the book invites readers to appreciate these poems as literature as well as spiritual artifacts, demonstrating how a few carefully chosen images can hold a complete farewell. Fourthly, nature imagery as a language for death and continuity. The collection repeatedly turns to nature as the primary vocabulary for speaking about mortality. Blossoms, dew, the moon, wind, autumn fields, and evening light appear not as decorative background, but as a shared symbolic system for change. This is significant because it reframes death less as a private catastrophe and more as part of the same cycle that governs seasons and weather. In many poems, a natural image does double work. It is a literal observation from a poet's surroundings and a metaphor for the self passing away. The book highlights how this imagery can soften the sharpness of direct statements while remaining emotionally honest. Nature references also help a death poem remain open-ended. Rather than asserting a fixed belief about what comes next, a poet can gesture toward dissolution, return, or quiet continuation through an image of fading light or melting snow. For contemporary readers, this can feel refreshing compared to modern tendencies to overexplain grief or to intellectualize mortality. The poems model an alternative, attend closely to what is present, let the world speak, and allow the mind to rest in the ordinary while confronting the ultimate. Translation and interpretation: reading across cultures without flattening. Because the book is a translated collection, it naturally raises questions about how meaning travels between languages and worldviews. Hoffman's role as editor and translator involves making choices about diction, rhythm, and how much cultural context to supply. The poems are famously compact in Japanese, where layers of reference can sit inside a single word or seasonal term. In English, the translator must balance clarity with preservation of ambiguity. The result is a set of poems that can be read quickly, but reward slow rereading, precisely because translation leaves interpretive space. This topic matters for readers who want to appreciate the poems without turning them into generalized inspirational sayings. The collection encourages a respectful approach. Notice the historical and religious background, but allow the poem to remain slightly beyond full capture. That slight distance can be part of the experience, mirroring the way death itself cannot be fully explained. By presenting many poems rather than a few heavily analyzed examples, the book lets patterns emerge organically. Readers can compare voices, observe recurring motifs, and sense how individual lives meet shared tradition, even through the veil of translation. In conclusion, this book best serves readers interested in Zen, haiku, Japanese literature, or any reflective approach to mortality. It is also valuable for poets and writers who want to see how extreme brevity can carry emotional weight without sentimentality. Those navigating grief, aging, or major life transitions may find the collection quietly supportive, not by offering advice, but by modeling presence and acceptance. The benefit to a reader's life lies in the way these poems train attention. They invite you to notice small realities, a season, a breath, a fading sound, and to recognize that meaning does not require long explanation. Returning to the poems over time can cultivate steadiness and a deeper appreciation of impermanence, which can translate into less anxiety about control and more gratitude for ordinary moments. Compared to many modern books on death that rely on argument, memoir, or self-help frameworks, this collection offers direct contact with a centuries-old practice, presented in a portable form that can be read in minutes yet contemplated for years. Its worth comes from authenticity of tradition, literary beauty, and the rare perspective of final words shaped by disciplined craft. If you would like to support Joel Hoffman, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around!